All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Friday. It's December 11th. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is
James Davis.
Feeling good about a game-by-game breakdown going into Week 14 here. Only a few weeks left of the regular season. The NFL, this is, I mean, I know there's been some scheduling stuff that's gone on, but they're going to end up getting pretty much every game in here, I think. By hook or by crook. Yeah, like, well, yeah, I guess, like, I don't want to speak too soon, but at this point, I feel like we're good, right? Like, if Kendall Hinton got to play quarterback and they pushed the game to Wednesday, like, we're going to make it through this thing, right? That's my sense at this point.
A quarter of these teams probably have herd immunity by this point as well, unfortunately, so... Yeah, I think we'll probably make it through.
We're going to go game by game. We're going to throw out some, we're going to throw out some bets that we like on the board this week. We also broke down some cash game plays for yesterday's podcast, so go check that out. We'll nod to some of those guys along the way. I will say last night, I rushed to publish the first part of our betting article last night because really liked the Rams. Took the Rams at -6, and then it got down to 4.5 and just bet them again because I just felt like that was the wrong way, and that ended up being fortuitous because they just absolutely destroyed the Patriots in a game where Cam gets benched. But yeah, I felt good about last night, so I'm kind of riding high right now.
Yeah, do you think Cam looks across the field at Jared Goff and is like, how come I get benched and he doesn't get benched? They basically had the exact same game of, you know, Cam 119 yards and a pick, Goff 137 yards, a pick and a touchdown. It's just that the Rams, they just get after the quarterback too much. I mean, for how long Cam wants to wait in the pocket, how little, you know, quickness he seems to have right now in terms of throwing the ball. It's a tough one. So hats off to the betting system, which is, do you know the overall record for the betting system since you've been really tracking it after its implementation a few weeks ago?
I mean, last 3 weeks is probably, I actually go look, I have it, but I just didn't have it in front of me. The last 3 weeks is probably something like 75% against the spread.
Yeah, it's insane.
Something like that. And then
that's over a big sample too. That's not like it's 3-1. It's like 30-10.
No. Yeah, no, that's like almost every game. There's almost every game that's in there. And some of it's a little different because it's like opening line value where it's then moved and stuff like that. So it's not a perfect, because you have to get it at, you get a certain number and then it moves and then that number's not as advantageous. So it shifts around during the course of a week. We'll go over some of the, what those bets are. Last week was particularly good, but like I said, did publish something yesterday that said take the Rams -4.5. And that really never seemed in doubt. I did say, I sent you a text at one point. I said the ball that Cam just threw looked like what happens if you and I threw a medicine ball drunk. It was like the ball just looked like it, everything was moving right. And then the ball just died. Just like went like 15 yards. It looked so bad. It was like all the mechanics looked right, but then for some reason the ball just didn't go anywhere. So I don't know what's gonna. Belichick did say that he's going to remain the starter, but I don't know to what end. I think at this point, all right.
Yeah, well, I think that this it's kind of over for the Pats at this point, but.
Yeah. All right. Let's roll game by game. Lots to talk about here. Some injury news that even got updated since we spoke yesterday. So that's kind of what is continually happening in the NFL's injury reports come in over the course of the week. James publishes an injury article each week that breaks down the situations you need to look at. And like I said, I'll have some more bets going up on the site later on today. Casey goes in and plays Miami. This game has a 50.5 over under that started at 48.5. So bet up 2 points coming up equal on both sides of the ball. We talked about Travis Kelce at length yesterday. I think there's a case to be made to probably like, you know, a stack just like Mahomes and Kelce or Mahomes and Tyreek in cash, although they're getting very expensive right now. And the only other injury piece that on the KC side is that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was sick last week and was in there in an emergency situation. They didn't rule him inactive, but then he ended up not playing at all. So I don't know, you know, where that lands us with the running back situation, if it matters at all. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, you know, we don't often get the opportunity to run KC out there in cash. That is definitely going to be something we'll take advantage of, at least at the tight end position, it looks like right now. You know, it's funny, in the past we've always said KC is just kind of like overpriced because they're so good and so consistent. It doesn't totally look that way to me this week. With Hill, Kelce, and Mahomes. So definitely interested there. On the Miami side, I think is where things get a little bit more dicey because, you know, not only has Miami not really supported a ton of DFS production since Tua has taken over, but there's also just a number of unknowns with the injury situation right now. So the main guy that anyone's going to consider on Miami this week is theoretically Miles Gaskin. Breida, there's just been no update on his status. He missed last week's game with the COVID IR designation. Ahmed has been missing practice all week. And Washington has been practicing, but on a limited basis. And Gaskin's got his own knee thing that is causing him to be somewhat limited as well. So basically just one big question mark. If one guy emerges as the only guy, all those guys would be potentially considerable, even for cash games, I would say, just because Miami continues to want to establish the run. And I think they'll even want to do so. I don't think they want to try to trade blows with like Tua and Mahomes, right? So like at least in the first half, I think they're going to try and establish the run. So I'm definitely keeping an eye on that running back situation. And if anything develops there, you'll find it in our injury article that should be published either late Friday night or, you know, midday to Saturday.
And you can run against KC. We've seen this season, if you can, you know, they rank 30th against the rush. It's just often that you're forced to kind of, like you said, trade blows or get into a shootout with them. That hasn't been.
Yeah, but the formula Denver did it last week, right? You know, right. Gordon was ripping him up. Lindsay, not so much. That's a two-headed monster. I won't totally understand, but yeah, you can definitely run on them. And if you have to keep a steady hand to do it though, because it might feel weird to like run the ball down and then Mahomes had passed the ball six times and equals your long right. drive or whatever. But yeah, I would be open to playing them even as dogs, it just given the prices right now.
I will say right now, our top FanDuel lineup has Tyreek, Kelsey, and Miles Gaskin all in it. I can't say I hate it, and it just feels, you know,
it's kind of bizarre. Yeah.
It's not usually the way it goes with these kinds of things. Right now, in terms of bets, I do have Miami +7.5 in this game. And so it's looks to me like it's more like a 5-point game. And that doesn't even factor in some home field advantage, although home field advantage really hasn't been that much of a thing this season. It really hasn't actually been a thing over the last two seasons. So with or without fans, I think there's only a very, very, it seems to be only a very slight edge in the aggregate in terms of whether you play home or away. Texans go and play the Bears. This game's at 45 right now with minus. It started at -2 in terms of the Texans on the road and now is down to -1. Looks like we're going to get another week of Mitchell Trubisky here. We get Deshaun Watson, who's, you know, greatly increased his fantasy production over the last few weeks. Really, actually, just since they fired Bill O'Brien has been the theme, is that he kind of got back to being the Deshaun Watson that we had seen in the past of just, you know, running
better.
The ball.
He's better than he was last year. He's just great.
Yeah, like the rushing, it's funny. It was almost 1-to-1. The rushing yards just appeared the second Bill O'Brien got fired. And the completion rate has been, you know, hovering around 70% during that time as well. Bears are not a great matchup. But we also saw that it didn't, you know, Watson didn't seem like he missed Will Fuller or any of the wide receivers last week. Still threw for 341 yards, 68% completion percentage. No touchdowns or interception, but the production, at least the volume, was still there. Thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I think Watson is just one of the very elite quarterbacks. For some reason, he's still not totally priced like the rest of the guys that I think he's in the same peer group with. He's seen up to 50% plus ownership in cash games in recent weeks. I think the Detroit game was where he had his kind of peak ownership recently, but plenty of people played him against Indy as well. So definitely keeping an eye on him. We talked at reasonable length about the wide receivers yesterday too, all of whom are still firmly in a strong consideration camp. It's worth noting on Cooks, not only did he, you know, leave and be diagnosed with a concussion last game, but he's also been limited in practice this week with both a foot and a neck injury. So he's going to the James Davis school of being injured, where it's like, you know, what's really bothering me? My foot, my neck, everything. My right wrist.
Yeah, kind of like everything from my hair down to my tippy toes.
Exactly. So, and I'm not talking about James Davis, the former Clemson running back. I'm talking
or the
about
mayor
myself,
of
by the way.
Mayor of Cleveland or whatever it was. There was another James Davis.
No, he was like a congressman. He was murdered, I think, right?
Oh, no. I don't know. Too soon. Jeez, I didn't realize that. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. So that was a funny moment. Our friend, mutual friend Thomas, came up. We were all working at the same summer camp, and he rushes over with like a headline. It says, James Davis murdered. I was like, what? So anyway, so the Houston side, I think, is pretty well documented by us so far. I'm not going to touch the running game there, which is a bit of a two-headed monster situation with the Johnson brothers, David and Duke. Neither of them has an injury report. I don't suspect either will be DFS viable, but the Bears have kind of surprisingly rounded into a DFS viable team for us with both many people, including us, playing Robinson in cash games last week. And David Montgomery going north of 20% cash game ownership, in spite of the fact that there were a lot of good, pretty cheap options.
Yeah,
last
he was
week.
60% on DraftKings too.
Like, yeah, what do you make of the Bears' offensive DFS options here? Should we be? We didn't talk too much about them for cash yesterday. How much do you think we should be focusing on them here?
Yeah, there's a lot to like here with Montgomery. I think like you kind of get everything you want. You get a Houston defense that's bottom six on the season, a little bit worse against the rush, 26. So you like that. They also, in terms of pace, they allow Houston allow the fourth most opponent plays per game. So you like that as well. Mm-hmm. And Montgomery is just basically the every down back at this point, like sometimes spelled by Cordarrelle Patterson. Like 20, he had 50 snaps last week. He had a lot of the snaps the week prior. It just didn't turn into the production, which is the only thing you worry about a little bit, that even in the, you know, correct game scripts or whatnot, or incorrect, like he played 58 of the 68 snaps, but only touched the ball. And he touched the ball 17 times because the targets seem to be sometimes are there when the carries aren't. The offense is not very good. And so that's the only, it's sometimes hard to like, you know, run out running backs on offenses that even if they get the ball a lot, the offense just is not very good. The Bears offense isn't good. They, you know, there's been weeks where they don't score that many points. You know, they have a 10 and a 17 point game in here in the last couple, and they have 30 and 25 over the last two. I think in all, I could probably play Montgomery in cash at 6,600 on DraftKings, 6,600 on FanDuel. I don't have the price in front of me. DraftKings, I'm blowing it here. Anyway, but because of the PPR piece, I think running him out there again on DraftKings, 6,500 on DraftKings would make sense as well. So I think overall, I don't mind it. But it probably has a little bit more to do with the Houston side. The Houston just is a good matchup at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Did you touch on Robinson?
I didn't touch him.
You did. I mean, so he's only gone up by $100 from last week where we were really interested in him. You know, he's been limited in practice with a knee thing. He only had 7 targets last week, as opposed to the kind of 9 to 13 range that he was in the 3 weeks prior. He was still super efficient on those 7 targets, turning it into 6 catches for 75 yards. Should we be considering him in cash games this week in that kind of same range, or is it just there's just better options?
I think there's just probably better options at the price point. So, but he's okay. Still good. Like, you know, he's gotten targets. That it's clear that Trubisky wants to throw to him. So I don't think you're worried about that piece at all. It's just that I just think probably for the price, there's a few better options, and I don't think you're really going wrong here. You know, look, the game, it didn't get away from them last week, so it's not so much that, but still, I mean, 6 for 7 for 75 yards, he's clearly the best receiver, and we have seen peak games from him where they can go all the way up to double-digit targets and more. Well, you can't go more than double digits. You can go a lot more than 10, a lot more than
triple-digit targets.
Triple-digit targets. Oh, my God. We got projected for 100 targets. Yes, overall, I think the Bears are in a good spot even as underdogs. It's mostly that I just don't love many of the running back situations here. So if I can get someone in the middle tier that I feel like at least is going to touch the ball 16-plus times in a game, I think that's where I can feel the most comfortable. And the fact that it's a thin spread makes me think that at least it seems close. I was just checking in on our bets. I didn't bet this one. Our system has this one as basically totally even.
Yeah, I took this one off as well.
It's priced within a point, and it looks to be basically correct. Houston minus one. All right, moving on. The Cardinals go in and play the Giants. This game started at -2.5 in favor of the Cardinals. Now down to -1.5 with the Giants looking like they might be playoff bound. Kind of been a pretty you know, just kind of sneaky team here coming down the stretch, especially coming off that win over Seattle last week. Let's start on the Kyler Murray side. How worried are we that the production has just kind of fallen off a cliff over the last couple weeks, specifically with the running? The running has not happened. Do you feel it's a blip on the radar? Do you feel like it's an injury management thing where they're trying to manage maybe possibly a shoulder injury, which has been a little bit rumored? But after basically 4 straight weeks of 10-plus carries, he has dropped down to 5 carries in each game. And the yards have not been there at all. Passing yards, 173 passing yards, 170 passing yards, and then 269 against Seattle. Admittedly, the Rams and New England offer their own sort of pacing and defensive issues for different reasons. But so maybe, I don't know, are these blips on the radar for him? Because this was a guy that we were happily trotted out there as an elite fantasy quarterback for almost the entire season up to this point.
I don't think you can consider them blips on the radar. I think when it's a 3 straight game sample, especially in, you know, the Cardinals would be happy to be like winning these games and doing quite well. And the fact that they're scaling back the rushing attempts, it appears to be intentional. it's not working very well. So I suppose you could argue that they might switch back and go the other direction. But I'm not optimistic about Murray's chances in the near term. I think this is like a reasonable matchup, but we've seen the Giants can get in the backfield and cause problems, not in a dissimilar way to how the Rams did in their last game. And if that's the case, things could get really tough for Murray in a hurry. So I don't see any need to play him like in cash games or anything this week. I think the big tournament upside is still there. Like this is still a guy who can throw three touchdowns and run for two more in a game. So anytime you're getting the very highest upside at a position for less than the highest price, you've got to consider it. And something like a Murray and Hopkins pairing might be underowned based on how things have gone for that duo the last couple weeks. So yeah, definitely keep it on your radar for big tournaments. Plenty of reason to be concerned in the near term, though. I'd compare it to Watson, actually, where a lot of times these quarterbacks that are excellent with their feet, it's the running that opens up the passing, because, you know, linebackers and people have to stay at home a little bit more when they know that you can just bust out and run for 15 yards at any moment. And that just kind of opens everything up and it makes things flow. And when that's not happening and that's not working for whatever reason, seeing this with Lamar Jackson this year too, then it just becomes problematic. So interested for big tournaments. I'm not going to try and catch a falling knife for cash games, though.
On the Giants side, it looks like Daniel Jones is going to return under center here for New York. I'm not sure that moves the needle for us at all. He's not a terrible play probably on DraftKings because he's just still coming pretty cheap at 5,500. I don't think I'd want to do it in cash. But if I was going to go into this lower sort of tier of quarterback, and that's the sub 6,000 guys, he probably is the best of that group. I mean, maybe Teddy Bridgewater, but I don't know. Daniel Jones, he can get out there and run a lot. Anything to like here on a fantasy side for the Giants? Wayne Gallman has been getting a lot of touches as well. Anything to see here?
Yeah, it's funny with Gallman. I looked long and hard at him for the cash game article this week. The big issue is that Alfred Morris is still just hanging around. He's getting more targets. I think Gallman had 16 carries versus Morris's 8. So Gallman's been more effective on a per touch basis for sure. He's just obviously better. Morris has been kicked around the league just for his entire career, never really stuck or done anything anywhere. So it's not like on a talent level he's threatening Gallman, but on an opportunity level he is. So I would be cautious about deploying Gallman for your cash game purposes. Once again, for big tournaments, I think it's interesting. I actually really like, if Jones does wind up playing, something like a Jones Evan Engram stack is really interesting to me in big tournaments, because first of all, you'll be the only person doing it for the most part. There's plenty of upside there. Engram is getting like 9 or 10 targets a game and relatively high value targets for the position. And tight end is so weak that you could wind up doing something interesting there if like Kelce is 50% owned or something, right? So you get Engram probably being arguably the highest upside non-Kelce tight end if Jones is playing. And then Jones, you know, he can also scramble a little bit. Maybe that's dicey with the hamstring injury, but if he scrambles in and gets you a touchdown or two, he could easily exceed points per dollar value here. So something that I have on my radar. I'm not sure. I'm going to want quite a clean bill of health from Jones. Hamstring injuries are going to be problems for more mobile quarterbacks. But yeah, definitely keeping an eye on it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, let's move into Minnesota and Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay coming off the bye week, a late season bye, but I think that just ended up working out because of like some COVID stuff. Like them and Carolina both had byes this past week. This game is Tampa Bay -6.5 at home. Huge total here, 53 total. You know, usually when we see -6.5, something like that at home, that is kind of where we want to live with a running back. And I'm just not sure. I mean, Ronald Jones has 10 carries and 9 carries over the, you know, each of the last 2 weeks that they actually played. I mean, is this a spot to like kind of start believing in the running game here? Have we just not seen it enough? Is there not enough to trust here on the Tampa Bay side? What are your thoughts starting out for the Bucs?
No, you're not going to play the Tampa Bay running game. Fournette's still lurking. He only had 6 touches last week, but he had 11 the week before that. So, you're just not going to be able to, I don't think, invest with any confidence in that Tampa Bay running game. The passing game, arguably a little bit more interesting, but there's just been, again, this kind of carousel situation where people have just been coming and going and, you know, stepping in and having big weeks. You know, Gronk, I think, led the team in receiving yards against the Chiefs, only did it on 7 targets. I guess he's still relatively cheap. Maybe you see people considering Gronk for cash games, but by and large, I just don't see a lot to love on this Tampa Bay team in general, which is kind of weird for a team that's 7.5-point favorites here.
I think Mike Evans cropped up on the injury report yesterday, so I think we want to keep an eye out for that. If he were to sit, I think we could redistribute some of his targets, although the targets haven't been crazy high, or they really just kind of come and gone for him this season, and it's just been a weird season, I think, just in general for this passing game, which I think people, you know, were really kind of pretty confident in going into the season, and it just hasn't totally worked out. Evans is averaging, fewer than 7 targets per game this season. That being said, if he were to sit, I think you could redistribute some of that to Godwin and Antonio Brown and Gronk, and maybe something starts happening there. But I'd probably have to wait and see. On the Minnesota side, we've now seen Justin Jefferson basically just light it up. He's elite. I mean, I don't know if he's going to end up being the best in this what was supposed to be a great wide receiver class. He's looked every bit of it so far. Is it just too much to think about running some of this, either Cook or Jefferson or guys like this, into the teeth of the Tampa Bay defense?
Yeah, I don't think it's too much. I think it's definitely worth a consideration. We were down on Jefferson going into last week with Thielen coming back, and somehow the Vikings have managed to support both of them, right? And I don't think we really thought that was going to be possible given their tendency just to lean into Cook. But man, this Vikings team now officially has a lot of offensive weapons and a lot of ways they can beat you. I think Cook is actually the more problematic guy, just because of the potential game script issues. We have seen the potential for him to get game scripted out in the past, and when everything is clicking with Thielen and Jefferson, I believe Cook would sort of be the odd man out. So we talked yesterday about how we like Derrick Henry in that big money running back slot over Cook this week. For cash game purposes, I still think I lean towards the cheaper guys that are arguably just as well used, right? Like, we're definitely going to play Michael Thomas over either two of these guys. Mm. Brandon Ayuk is like the full 1,000 cheaper than them, getting similar target share. You could argue that it's lower quality targets, but we're kind of running out of room at the wide receiver table at some point. So I don't know that either of them will sneak into our cash games. But yeah, once again, for big tournaments, especially as like a picking a one-off as not part of a stack, I guess is what I'm saying, I really like Jefferson for that reason.
Yeah, this is a weird one because the targets have really creeped up. We've talked about this before, where we've seen also Minnesota, when they get into, you know, different kinds of game scripts, they can just definitely just lean on the run completely and the pass disappears. So I'm not really sure where that lands us with them in cash, but I think that I can definitely see a game stack here. And I will say, you know, at least in terms of Vegas, this game I believe has the highest total on the week. 53 is the highest total going into the week 14 main slate. So it projects to be a shootout. That feels like a lot will have to do with the passing games. And I just feel it would feel a little bit weird, I think, to run out some Minnesota guys in anything more than just like correlated stacks against Tampa Bay in a game that hopefully ends up dialing it up to a lot of points. Tennessee goes in and plays Jacksonville. Tennessee is -7.5 road favorites here. This game started at 53.5, now down to 52.5. We have targeted passing attacks against the Jags almost all season. That's been pretty much correct all throughout. They've been either last or, you know, moving between dead last or last in terms of passing defense DVOA this season. Right now they sit 31st. Shout out to the Jets who were able to scoot past them last week on the heels of a Derek Carr all out blitz touchdown that kept their winless season
alive.
When
the Jets were doing like when we used to again work at camp, and it would be like the grown-ups against the kids soccer game, and at the end of the game it's like some plucky 8-year-old dribbles somehow through the entire group of adults to win the game. That's kind of had that vibe to me.
Yeah, it's like, do we
really want to win this one? I don't know.
So Jacksonville's terrible. They also allow a ton of opponents points per game. And so that would make me think like, oh, okay, where are we at with Ryan Tannehill? Where are we at with Corey Davis? You know, this passing piece. And those aren't guys that are really showing up for us. Now, some of it's price correction because the sites do kind of, you know, as this stuff goes along, get in tune to who someone's playing. And right now Tannehill sits at 7,900, yeah. You know, more than guys like Taysom Hill, almost in that Kyler Murray range. He's 100 less than Deshaun Watson on FanDuel, right? So it's like, okay, well, what am I really getting here?
You can't play him for that. And the basic reason on a fundamental level is Tennessee has a plan for when they're ahead in the game, and it doesn't involve Ryan Tannehill. The reason he was incredible last week is because the opponents put up 45 points on them, and that's pretty unlikely to happen this week. You don't have to go back too far to find a 22 passing attempt game against Indy, 27 against Indy in their prior meeting, 21 against Chicago on November 5th, right? So you just can't do it. You cannot play Tannehill in cash. For big tournaments, I can see the argument, you know, if they just wind up electing to light it up through the air, but I have a strong feeling that this is just going to be Derrick Henry running downhill for 30 plus touches and, you know, a game that's over 25 minutes in real time faster than any of the other games on the slate, just because they're playing ball control. But that's just my gut.
On the other side of the ball with Jacksonville, we talked a little bit about James Robinson yesterday on the Cash Game podcast, simply because the volume for him, it's like the Joe Mixon thing from last year. It's like, it kind of doesn't matter how the game's going. They're just going to give James Robinson the ball a ton. The Bengals did this with Mixon last season for reasons that are unknown, just because I just don't know why you would pound a guy into a guy that maybe has like meaningful skill that you could use in the future, running him, just, you know, putting tons of miles on him when the games don't mean anything, unless you're just paying lip service to fans. I'm actually not sure like why else they're doing it. That being said, they continue to do it on a week-to-week basis. Anything else to kind of re-explore here with Robinson? And then anything to see in a passing game where they should be playing from behind against? And the Tennessee's not a very good defense.
Yeah, so I said a very lengthy piece on Robinson yesterday. The opportunity seems to be pretty well assured, so I don't think you need to overthink that too much. I think he's just a totally playable option. The only guy worth noting on the Jacksonville side through the air is probably DJ Shark Jr. The targets have sort of been there the last couple weeks. The quarterback play is just so bad, though, that I don't really know what you're supposed to do here. You can't lean into Shark the way you might have been able to do with Minshew under center. The targets haven't been quite as high as they were with Minshew either, so I don't see it. I'm not going to bother here.
All right, Dallas goes in and plays Cincinnati. Dallas, pretty much a train wreck, obviously, this season. They are favored here, though, 3.5-point road favorites against the Bengals team that has their own problem. So it's not like this is kind of a dumpster dive game. This game got flexed. This game was supposed to be the night game, I believe, and it just got flexed right out until, I forget, the Giants game got put in. Oh, you know what? I take that back. I need to check this, actually, now that we're talking, because I realized this Giants game got flexed, and I wonder if it got flexed off of the main slate. It might have. I might have made a mistake here, and I wonder if our thing.
It's currently on the main slate on FanDuel.
You know what? I'm thinking it's next week, week 15. I got to flex. I'm getting all turned around here. I'm going to leave it in just to let everyone know I make mistakes. Great. But moving on.
They wouldn't have known that prior to that. So that's big of you to finally reveal that you do occasionally make mistakes.
Everyone heard the first one in a very, very long time. You're live on the podcast. So congrats, everyone. You can write it down.
I should make like a Google sheet to keep track of your mistakes, just to happen so infrequently that it's hard to.
The Bengals stink. And Zeke, for all the Dallas's problems, did touch the ball 24 times last week. They continue to, you know, still going to run him if the games are close, I think. Is this a week to play Zeke here? It feels terrible. Our projection on him, I'm just checking the projection on him, where he lands compared to the big boys. He's way lower, I guess. I mean, the seasons has been kind
of... We might be low on his ownership, his usage, actually. I'm going to go ahead and take a look at that, because I don't know if we've updated based on that last game.
All right. Well, either way, I'll do that while we're talking. But the where do we stand with the Dallas offense? I mean, they still have, you know, Andy Dalton is a downgrade from Dak. They've still been able to do some stuff here. It hasn't been totally terrible. It hasn't been good by any means. But where do we stand with where we are with
it's
Dallas?
Pretty terrible.
What's that?
I don't want to play any of these guys. I couldn't see an argument for playing Elliott. So I'll say that first. I think, assuming that this calf thing is no big deal and he winds up just rolling back out there against Cincinnati, Dallas still does have incentive to try at this point. So I could see playing Elliott, actually. I don't think that's bad at all. The rest of it is just kind of a stay away from me, kind of from top to bottom. You still have a lot of good receivers and one very bad quarterback. So that's not usually a recipe for DFS interest. Dalton rates to spread the ball around a little bit. You know, he's also just not, again, not very good. So there's no telling that even if you get nine targets, if it's going to amount to much. Like Cooper had nine targets against Baltimore. He had 43 yards receiving, right? So I don't see myself investing in the passing game whatsoever. But Zeke is interesting. I could see just with how bad running back is this week. Like with a gun to your head right now, would you prefer Elliott at 7,600 or Robinson at 8,000?
Probably Zeke, I think.
I would too. I think that's I don't want to say it's not even close, but man, for potential game script issues and just the team's other options, I think Elliott looks strong to me there.
Yeah, this is a funny one. We were pretty correct on his opportunities. Maybe a tick too low on the targets, but that one could be up for that one's a little bit subjective. So this was the one we're going to want to monitor, I think, especially as we get into where we kind of landed a position. It's mostly because running back is just a little bit tricky. If you hear us kind of moving back and forth between some of these guys that maybe don't sound like great options, is because a lot of the options just have just issues, either it's game script issues or it's the teams are bad or whatever it is. It's like very few guys line up except for Henry, which I think you can feel pretty confident in the opportunity and the idea that they'll be winning. After that, you really have to squint to see it with some of these guys. One thing we missed yesterday, the next game is Denver and Carolina. And I apologize. One thing we missed yesterday was a COVID report that came out of Carolina that Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore are both on the reserve COVID list. That came out 2 days ago, which kind of just flew past me. It was in our system in terms of like they had been ruled out, but I hadn't adjusted the team projection that much. Also, along with that, it came out yesterday, Matt Rhule reported that Christian McCaffrey is not going to play this week. So we're going to get another week of Mike Davis. They're still 3.5-point home favorites here, Carolina over Denver. Are we looking at like a Robbie Anderson, Mike Davis stack here? Because if they're just this, if they're missing the whole wide receiver core, and I'm going to need to do some research about who the next guys up here. They have a couple other guys that they're probably going to move up from the practice squad. But knowing this piece here, does that change some of our cash game thinking based on opportunity just around other pieces that are now almost definitely not going to play this week for Carolina?
Yeah, Anderson does check that box for me of a guy who's just already a reasonable, like a guy who's kind of kicking around the system. And when the opportunity goes up dramatically, he becomes very interesting. So, you know, he was already getting 7, 9, 6, 13, 8 targets, right? So if that if the true number for him is like 8.5 or 9 targets, he's going to be in our cash game lineups. And I don't think that seems too terrible to me. As for Davis, it's kind of been interesting how the sites have handled his pricing. I don't know why they don't just leave these backups prices high. Like, were there people who wanted to play Mike Davis at 6,800 as Christian McCaffrey's backup? I don't think so. So why not just leave him at 7,700, which is probably his fair price when McCaffrey's out. Given that McCaffrey is out and we probably will get, you know, low 20s, high teens touches for Davis, that seems pretty darn good, right? 6,800 again on a week where running back is awful. Like, it's hard to overstate how little value there is at this position this week. It's not even clear you can afford Henry, first of all. So if you are going to afford Henry, you're going to need cheap-ish guys like Davis. So yeah, I'm totally fine with both of these plays.
Yeah, I think Davis, like I said, home favorite here, should see increased opportunity. The fact that they're just dropping out, and by the way, Curtis Samuel was getting some carries too. So the fact that they move him out does make me feel pretty bullish on Davis, like being just an every down guy here. You know, whether or not the Denver defense maybe does a little bit more loading up on Robbie Anderson, that could be. They are a funnel defense, which is worth to note. They're 7th this year against the pass, but 22nd against the rush. So the Davis piece feels totally safe to me. The Robbie Anderson one is maybe a little bit closer, but it's hard to see how they don't just force the ball down these guys' throats because I'm just not sure who next guy up here. I mean, Brandon Zylstra, like Farrell Cooper, these are the guys that are sort of projecting right now to be the guys that are like, you know, going to soak up some of that target share. It's kind of hard to see that as well. So something to keep an eye on here. Again, I feel bad. Omitting that in yesterday's podcast was a mistake. It was just simply a miss. So we're going to keep an eye on here, but it looks like I'm feeling more and more confident. Like Mike Davis is just probably going to be at least checking one box for us at running back at a tougher position. Let me just roll back through to make sure I didn't miss any bets here. So we did Carolina. That one I did not bet. Didn't see that one. I do have took Tennessee -7.5. Against Jacksonville, like that number. Did take Miami +7.5 against the Chiefs. I don't know if I mentioned that one. And then Arizona -2.5 That line was only available at one book when I was able to do it. It was -3 in some other
spots. Yeah, what the hell? Is this just a Daniel Jones stuff?
I'm not sure. I'm not totally sure. So just adding, and finally, Minnesota +6.5 against the Tampa Bay. Missed a lot of these along the way. Sorry. Getting more used to throwing these bets in as we roll through the podcast. Indianapolis goes in and plays Las Vegas. This game has a pretty high total at 51. That is the Colts -2.5 on the road. Jonathan Taylor, we spoke about him the previous week, but it looked like they went back right to just kind of wanting to give everyone a little bite of the apple when it came to the running game. And then we're coming off a Vegas game where, Josh Jacobs sat. Devontae Booker got a lot of touches, but it really didn't do anything with him at all. What are your thoughts on this game? It looks like Jacobs is probably going to play at this point.
Yeah, it's been hard to read what's going on in Vegas with the running back situation. Last week, they were a little bit vague before finally ruling Jacobs out before the weekend. Jacobs has returned to practice in a limited fashion during this week. That's considered to be like a positive time towards his status against the Colts. But some people believe it's just going to be a game time decision sort of thing, in which case we'll just be staying away. If Jacobs were to sit, do you mind going back to Booker here? He didn't really get there for us last week, but he's still awfully cheap. He's cheaper than he was last week in this matchup against the Colts. If you can pencil him in for 18 touches, you're talking about a sub $6,000 running back. He wasn't very good on a per touch basis last week, but sometimes the opportunity just trumps everything when there's so little value. So could you see doing that again, or would you prefer to lean in some of these other directions?
No, I don't think you can consider Booker here. The Indy defense, we did it last week because the Jets defense is bad. They're much better against the run. And I do think our projection on Booker was just too bullish in retrospect, and sort of just not relitigating what we did, but just kind of looking back and kind of trying to figure out, you know, where things go right, where things go wrong. Booker was the one where I kind of looked back at that projection and thought, man, that was just, it was just a little too high. That being said, this is an even worse situation for them than it was against the Jets. Indy is just a top five defense overall. So, and just equally good against the pass and the run. So I'm not interested in going back to Booker knowing that. And Jacobs were to sit, I'm sure he would just have an awesome game, because that's just kind of how life seems to work sometimes with things like this. Because that's just, it's almost like I can like preload those texts to you, right? It's like I'm going to preload the Booker touchdown.
Just schedule them with like Hoot or something.
yeah. Like schedule like Booker touchdown, of course. Like that one, that's one that I would probably, I could preload now.
Just, well, it'll be like the first drive. The other way is too, a nice way that DFS does it to you is like, Booker like won't even touch the ball on the whole first drive, and he'll finish it with like 2 carries for 3 yards and a touchdown. So it's we were right in some ways, but he just gets the points anyway. Yeah, that's what I'm bracing for.
Yeah, me too. And I'm not bracing to play these guys at all. And look, these are just two teams that they're not bad teams. It's just that they're from a fantasy perspective, it's just tough on a week to week basis. Like you have Darren Waller, but he's clearly the second best tight end this season after Kelsey.
Yeah.
You don't really get a discount on him at this point, so I don't really know why you'd want to do it. And then Indianapolis is just fine to just give everyone a turn, sort of like youth style, where everyone just gets a turn, make sure everyone gets their couple touches a game so no one complains after the game and their parents don't call. Like, I don't really know what else to say about the Colts at this point. They're a good team, but on a week-to-week basis, good luck trying to figure out what the plan is and who's going to get the ball.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I certainly don't want to play any Raiders. Waller has to be in your rotation for big tournaments just based on the incredible, high teens target upside that he's now demonstrated multiple times this season. You're not going to play him over Kelsey, and I think the savings isn't significant enough that it'll really free up much for you anywhere else for cash games, so you just kind of can't do it. And then on the Indy side, you took my perspective perfectly. They spread the ball out way too much in the running game, and the passing game is just so ineffective that you don't want any part of it. So it's a pass.
Yeah, which is crazy because it's like it. And by the way, it's in some ways it's a pass season for tournaments. Like the volume is just not even there on the best of days for some of these guys. I mean, maybe, get a random Michael Pittman game. Like I said, you sometimes get a Taylor running downhill game, and I think that one is one if you're going to take a GBP flyer, that's the one. Is Taylor? It's just like this is the game they kind of lean into him a little bit more, and he touches the ball 20 plus times. But you just can't pencil him in for it at this point because there's just too many weeks of just going back and forth. Jets go in and play Seattle. Seattle is now 13.5-point home favorites. The line is at 47. Jets have almost no points coming up on the board here. Rightfully so. The team's terrible.
I'm taking the Jets this week, Doug. I took the Jets at +13.5.
I wonder if I did too. I might have too.
It looks like you did based on. We have a little betting sheet, a little internal betting sheet that we use to keep track of each other's bets. Doug has made a system that's, like I said, been crushing. Your system, Doug, has Seattle as roughly 9-point favorites here. So that doesn't seem outrageous to me, right? Like Wilson, after starting the season and everyone's like, did you know Wilson has never had an MVP vote before? He's just not played like an MVP recently. And the Jets, for as bad as they are offensively, that's only one side of the football. I think one issue the public has in just betting in general is they really know how many good fantasy guys you have in this day and age, right? And they look at the Jets and they're like, who's their quarterback? Who's their running back? I'm going to bet on just these two guys. And it's like, yeah, but at least 20 guys or other guys are going to have a big impact on the final score of this game, if not more, if you include special teams. So I love the Jets 13.5 here. I think it's tough to get value like this in really any kind of betting thing. You're never going to get value like this when it's two popular teams that have been the same all season, right? Like if the Chiefs and Steelers play, the line won't be off by 4.5 points. I bet the Jets double my normal bet size this week. So wanted to share.
One of the reasons I'm encouraged about this bet too is because one thing the system doesn't do is very well yet, just because it's sort of like just in its infancy stages here, is it takes more of just a season long approach to how teams have behaved and acted over the course of the season without really making great grand adjustments for when there's been massive differences in terms of the personnel. Mm-hmm. And one of those differences is the difference in between Joe Flacco and Sam Darnold. Now, Sam Darnold has stunk this year. So that's probably maybe not the discussion, but I don't think there's any doubt that he's better than Joe Flacco, right? And so if the system is taking even some of those Joe Flacco games, putting it in there and saying, hey, this is like still a reasonable bet, like I get even more encouraged about it. And that's just me being subjective rather than just looking at the raw numbers.
No, I think that's right, though. And I think it's why, like, I didn't recommend the Dallas Cincy game from our betting system, because there's been so much turmoil, you know, with Dak coming in and out, Cincinnati going from Burrow to Shipley to Allen, whoever else, that I wouldn't stick my neck out there if you're looking at season-long metrics. And I don't think we are equipped to, like, eyeball test it and be like, Allen is worth 3.5 points less per game than Burrow or something, right? Like, that's just not in our skill set. I don't frankly think it's in anyone's skill set, but that's a discussion for a different time. But for these teams where we do have a season's worth of data, pretty much what their plan is. And with the Jets, I think, like you said, if anything, season-long metrics are going to be low on what the Jets are capable of.
So you would think.
Betting podcast or anything, but I'm feeling very strong about this one.
And again, I'm looking at Darnold's numbers are bad. 5 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Like, this is a bad team. And maybe, and I'll move on from this after this, but, you know, maybe a thing too, like I've been kind of stewing on, is maybe bad teams are just going to be bad quarterback sort of independent. Like, Joe Burrow represents improvement clearly on the other guys, like Finley or Allen or whoever, but like, you know, how much can you make up the difference when the rest of the team is just absolute trash? The Jets might be in a similar situation. Now, it's still fine for me to – I think it's fine for me to bet, because you're still getting what is presumably the better guy in Darnold. But I do wonder sometimes the quarterback can make a difference, but after the whole season's said and done and everyone else has been able to play all the other parts of the game, if the team sucks, maybe the incremental difference between, you know, a pedigree guy and just like the next guy up isn't as much as you think. But that's just my own random opinion. Okay. Let's keep moving. Oh, sorry. We didn't even talk about this game from a fantasy perspective.
DFS. Okay. I got a couple thoughts on this. So the Jets are complete and total stay away. So that's, we can cross them off right away. Seattle, I do think, is kind of interesting. The big guy I'm looking at on Seattle right now is Chris Carson. So Chris Carson, you know, he only saw 35% of the offensive snaps roughly in his first game back. Carroll was kind of like a little bit coy about how Carson would be deployed. They said, you know, that they were going to kind of take it easy and try to ease him back in. That wasn't what happened last week. He saw essentially all of the running back touches last week. He had 19 total touches in a game where, oddly, the game script didn't favor Seattle being able to run the ball, which is what most people forecasted it would be, again, except for our betting system, which nailed this game perfectly. But I think that Carson makes for a very interesting guy to target here. Like we talked about earlier, the Jets, not a terrible running defense, but given that things have been like somewhat challenging for Wilson, and given the fact that Seattle are 13.5-point favorites here, even if you think they're truly just 9-point favorites the way we do, that still spells a lot of running back carries. So do you buy that Seattle is going to try and limit Carson here? They've got to be at least a little bit motivated to put their best guy out there, right? Like, the rest of these Seattle backups have been just awful. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. Carson, not exactly cheap and probably not a cash game play, but is he worth a big tournament stab here?
Yeah, probably. I mean, like you said, the Jets defense is better against the run, so that was a little concerning. I do think there's a situation here where they probably do try to dial in the weakness and just air it out and just try to get up early. And that hasn't been always where they've been wanting to establish things. But, I mean, I feel like they have to see that there's one way, there's a much better way to attack this team, and it's not on the ground, because seventh overall against the rush. That being said, it's not like the Jets don't allow rushing yards to anybody, right? Like, this is kind of right. It is like a game script based overall evaluation. So I'm with it. I could also see this being like a peak game for one of Lockett or Metcalf. I don't think I'm going to do it in cash because I'm worried the game gets out of hand. And we've just seen, you know, them try to, like, they just did this with Lockett 2 weeks, with Metcalf 2 weeks ago against the Eagles, where they just wanted to absolutely just destroy the Eagles early by just bombing it out to him, and it worked. So I do think there's some peak games here, maybe possibly coming from them. And look, it ends up being, like we said with Seattle, it kind of just becomes like one guy gets it on a given week, right? Like, that's who gets the points, it seems like, outside of Russ.
Right.
And that can be a little hard to predict.
But they're both priced like they're both going to get the points.
And that's right. And it makes sense because over the course of the season, both their fantasy points, this is Lockett and Metcalf at least, both their fantasy points are high because they've had just absolutely bananas games. But the peaks and valleys, like, I should look at their standard deviation. Like, the coefficient of variation is probably among the highest in the league, is my guess, around wide receivers that are in the same tier, right? Because that's me just guessing at that without actually looking, but I'll maybe try to look as we're talking about the next game. But that would strike me as correct if I saw that, because that just feels like what happens when the joke is, oh, no one gets Lockett or Metcalf right on a week-to-week basis. Washington goes in and plays San Francisco. San Francisco, 3-point home favorites here. I'm not sure from a fantasy perspective what there is to see. Both these teams are pretty slow. I mean, I guess like the one piece is Antonio Gibson might not play. I don't know where that would land you on McKissick. Went right back to getting a lot of targets last week, and when they were playing from behind, and also after Gibson was out of the game. But that being said, it was Peyton Barber who got all the rushing attempts. So yeah. I don't think you can, even though McKissick played 53 snaps of the 72 and had 10 targets, we've seen the targets be able to disappear quickly, right? Like, that they disappear too quickly for you to consider in cash. That's at least the way I kind of think about it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the feeling I have too. And Barber, you know, nice job carrying the ball 14 times last week. He turned it into 23 yards on the ground.
He stinks. So. Like, he stinks. I don't know why they. I don't exactly know why teams exciting. Do this, but they do it. Yeah. I'm not sure why, but it happens.
Yeah, I could see McKissick being playable. I think we've gotten enough other value kind of creeping up that we probably don't need to do it. But, you know, once again, on DraftKings, those receptions really matter. And you're getting a guy who, picking arbitrary endpoints in 3 of the last 5 weeks, he's had double-digit targets. Now, in a couple of those other weeks, he's skunked you completely, and you just lost automatically if you played him in cash. But if you did manage to catch that lightning in a bottle, in any of those other weeks, you were pretty enthusiastic about what you were getting. So I definitely like this for big tournaments, and there is a world where I could consider this in cash if Gibson were rolled out.
I was just going to go back to one thing real quick, because I just looked this up for the Seattle piece. So it's interesting. In terms of coefficient of variation, Metcalf has actually been surprisingly consistent on a DraftKings basis. Not the most consistent, but, you know, the guys ahead of him, Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill, have been a little bit, you know, more less consistent. The guy like underneath him, Keenan Allen, has been more on a week-to-week basis. And Tyler Lockett, on the other hand, has like the biggest basically standard deviation of any of these guys.
Because he had that one absolutely huge week, right?
Yeah, like, that right. And I think that, right. And that's always going to throw things off. Right. I think maybe he might even had two. So, it is just funny seeing how this kind of thing happens, about what, in terms of where you land with with consistency, or what can be apparent consistency. Anything to see on San Francisco side? We talk about Brandon Ayuk. I'm still on that from a cash game perspective. Think he's mispriced. But anything else? I mean, I felt like the San Francisco running game went right back to just you try to figure out who it's going to be. Like, it feels like it's going to be Mostert, and then I believe Jeff Wilson got the majority of the snaps last week. Jeff Wilson outsnapped Mostert 28-27. Anything to like here in San Francisco? It's kind of hard for me to see it.
Not really. No, I think this is just a team that you got to stay away from, outside of Ayuk, who remains a very, very good play.
All right, moving on. We got the Falcons going in and play the Chargers. This game is Falcons -2.5 on the road against LA, 49.5 over under. Let's start on the Falcons side. Chargers defense has been no great shakes this season. Teams have been able to rack up, you know, just they have been able to rack up some points against them. They're significantly worse against the run. That is the Chargers. Where do you stand on anything to see here from the Atlanta side? It feels like this is a game we'd want to target. And then sometimes Atlanta is a little tough to get a read on, especially when everyone's able to roll out there.
Right. So we're keeping an eye on Julio Jones for Atlanta right now. He mispracticed on Thursday. We're recording this before, you know, Friday's practice, which is usually when we get our designation for the week. So something worth keeping an eye on. Obviously, that frees up opportunity for guys like Ridley and Gage. We won't know a lot until then. The running back situation seems just like a total stay away to me, right? I don't see any reason to stick our necks out, even if, say, Gurley were to miss this game again. The two-headed monster, Brian Hill and Ito Smith, is probably a non-starter. So, yeah, I'm not excited about anything on Atlanta outside of the passing game. I think we could see some value there, but we just have to wait and see on Jones's status.
On the Charger side, we're a week removed from really wanting to play Austin Eckler, and they ran into just the craziest, weird, terrible game last week against against the Patriots, where they end up just getting basically shut out, and it was all bad. That being said, Eckler still touched the ball 17 or had 17 looks in this game. Now, they took their foot, they essentially just took him out at the end, and Kalen Ballage came in. But Eckler was the guy until they cried no mercy and said it's over here. But we're only a week removed from Austin Eckler touching the ball like wide receiver one like targets and, you know, running back two carries. Like, he had 30 touches the week prior to this.
Right. So Ballage did miss that week, though, against Buffalo. And while Ballage certainly got more of the touches after the game was out of hand against New England, he was still involved early, too. So I don't think it was simply a game script thing that took Eckler out of, you know, being the only guy getting snaps, essentially. That being said, you know, if splitting snaps with or splitting touches with Kalen Ballage means that you're still going to get 9 targets out of Eckler, I don't think you can rule him out. But given how weird last week was, I'd rather not stick my neck out on a guy who cost $7,500 and might be in a timeshare, but we're not totally sure, because we had 1 week where his, you know, timeshare partner was missing, and then another week where they lost by 45 points. So I don't think I want to do this for cash game purposes. The upside is obviously ridiculous if it turns out that Ballage is only kind of a in case of emergency guy as Eckler continues to get healthier. So I'm going to put this one in my back pocket for big tournaments. I would prefer not to do it in cash, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Big tournament play on DraftKings, especially. There's just too many. There's just enough of a track record to say there's very few guys in the league that have 30 touch upside. Eckler is one of those guys. But, you know, the floor on him is lower than some other guys that might exist in that same category. But he definitely is among the group that it could happen for, even though it's unlikely. And that's just where he sits with price. I'm with you. Like, there's too many ways he can burn you here. But in terms of tournaments, I think this is
Davis should touch the ball more than Eckler on average in these games, I would guess. But like, Eckler could have 12 catches, which Mike Davis won't have.
So. Exactly. So just fits the very definition of a tournament play. Green Bay goes in and plays Detroit. Green Bay is 7.5-point home favorites here. This game, I take it back, up on the main slate. I said before another game had the highest total. This one has the highest total at 55.5. You know, you were very dismissive / borderline angry about the prospect of playing Aaron Jones yesterday. I heard a twinge of just sort of like maybe there was something else bothering you. I don't know. It would surprise me if it was just that mad about Aaron Jones, or like something else was bothering you, and, you know, because you were thinking back on something. Or
yeah, it's just like we're going back into quarantine. You know, like the whole thing, Doug. I just got a lot on my plate right now, so
okay.
I appreciate you. You dig it a little deeper.
So right now at 7,600, Jones is showing up not 100%, but is creeping around our DraftKings lineups.
Your tone. Your tone is like when I'm trying to tell the kids, like, we are going to be going out later today. You still have 3 hours to do whatever you want, but we do have to go to the dentist.
I'm glad you said the dentist, because it's something like, it's not going to be the whole day that's going to get ruined, but there's going to be part of it that's going to get ruined. So let's just decide what our attitude is going to be, or let's just try to mentally prepare for it. Like that, you know, when I need to get my youngest into the car, you got to start gearing that. You got to start, you know, greasing those wheels.
You're priming that, sure.
90 minutes before, because you're not doing it in the moment. If you think you're getting out the door in 5 minutes, that's simply not happening. You need to start laying the groundwork 90 minutes before. Anyway, Aaron Jones. I mean, if we remove him, you start getting guys like Eckler, right, at 7,000. And so like maybe that's the question. It's like it's a seven, and not to say that you have to play either of these guys. I'm just saying sort of where our system is, you know, trying to make decisions around some of these projections, you know, right there, this guy or that guy, they're based around the same price on DraftKings. Would you rather play Eckler or Aaron Jones in these situations?
I'd rather take Eckler, I think, for two reasons. First of all, we know Jones is in a timeshare. We believe that Eckler might be in a timeshare. So that gives the nod to Eckler. On DraftKings, being more reception heavy is a big advantage. Jones is getting two or three targets a week. Eckler, even in his timeshare, even in the most bizarre, crazy game script of all time last week, had nine targets. So that's three weeks worth of targets for Aaron Jones. I don't think this one is especially close. Like, I can see the argument for playing Jones if there really is just nothing available, but this isn't where you start for me. This is a guy who you plug in as your last guy in the lineup because you like the rest, not a guy you build around.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, and I think we might be on the wrong side of the chalk here, and I totally get why you would you can talk yourself into playing him, and just because the script seems like it's really going to favor him, and I totally agree. There's just Jamal Williams is just there and not terrible, and if, as long as he exists, then we're going to be in a situation where... And by the way, there is another thing where Eckler... let me just double check that I'm right about this. I'm pretty sure if I look at the snap count, we're going to see overlap between... Yeah, there is. Right. So there's overlap between Eckler and Balazs in terms of in terms of like seeing the field, because there were 62 total offensive plays run, and that accounted for, I take it back. It was right around even. But there are times where they line Eckler up as a wide receiver in a way that just doesn't happen for Jones. And so it's the fact that Jamal Williams still exists, I think I'm probably with you. And we've seen it happen before where Aaron Jones, if it's the Aaron Jones week, you're in trouble because he can, like, we're only a week removed. He was 15 for 130 in a touchdown last week. Yeah. And if things are cooking, he can put it up with the very best in the game. And Jamal Williams was still a 2-to-1 in terms of snaps last week.
Yeah, 2-to-1 is good. And 2-to-1 in this running game is worth more than 2-to-1 in the Bears running game with David Montgomery. And I wouldn't dispute any of that. It's more of just a price problem with Jones. He's still priced very similar to a guy who's running the show by himself. I just don't view him that way. So Williams only touched the ball 7 times last week, but he touched the ball 17 times against Chicago. So I wouldn't be excited about it, whether it's the chalk play or not, but that's just
another 12 target week out of Davante Adams last week. Yeah. It's just every week. If the games are close, he's going to touch double digit targets and he catches touchdowns and he basically just does every single thing you want. At what point do we need to prioritize a guy like him for cash games, just knowing that the floor in him is just higher than any other receiver? I mean, I guess Tyreek Hill, the way they've been using him this season, it would still make me a little worried about Tyreek Hill just because of the historical stuff with him sort of disappearing at times. That hasn't happened really this season, but it has in past seasons, and Adams a little more expensive. At what point do we need to say Davante Adams is just like as safe as you can get, especially in PPR?
Well, yeah, this is a question I was going to bring to you, actually. So, you know, we've talked about guys like, you know, Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry as the obvious places we want to spend up on a week-to-week basis. Davante Adams has scored just a hair under Dalvin Cook's fantasy points per game on FanDuel. He's exceeded him on DraftKings, thanks to the receptions. And he's, like, way better than Derrick Henry. He's scoring 4 fantasy points per game more than Derrick Henry on the season. Are we insane for just not prioritizing him over Derrick Henry? Because we're not comparing him to other wide receivers. Like, he's obviously better than them. But in terms of that one skill position guy that we can invest 9,000 plus in this week, should it just be Davante Adams and then we, you know, mix and match at other positions?
Yeah, I mean, he's so much better. It's crazy. Like, he's averaging 27 DraftKings points per game this season. Actually, really 28 if I round up. That's closer to 28. The next closest guy is Tyreek Hill at a full 4 points per game less,
right,
at 23.65. And then you really start dropping down to DK Metcalf. I mean, like, right now, Davante Adams to the third guy is 7.5 DraftKings points more than the third best points per game PPR guy. Like, that is nuts. And then there's a clustering effect around the Metcalfs and Allens and Thielens and guys like this. So he's such a tier above everybody else that it's sort of like that McCaffrey season from a couple years ago, right? It's like, it's so much better. And it's just always, the passes are always just going to feel more risky. I don't, you know what I mean? I just don't know I don't know. I don't know if I'm like, maybe I just need to let the math take over and say, look, it just, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Running backs can get burned off their opportunity too. So I don't know. It just, but it is crazy how much better he is than everybody else.
Yeah. I think we just give the numbers, you know, give him the right number of targets and then let the system do the work. I think oftentimes the system is good about understanding where the value is. And if the system, for instance, really likes the mid $6,000 wide receivers in a way it doesn't like the mid $6,000 running backs, that's also another reason the scales get tipped here and there, but certainly worth keeping on the radar.
Detroit looks like they're going to get DeAndre Swift back from the concussions, and he's had so many headaches, and I just don't know why you do it with these guys when they can't even, like, yeah, you know, they aren't themselves because of the concussion stuff, but it does look like he's going to be back this week. I get the sense I'll probably still ease him in. They're not like crazy underdogs for how, you know, sort of discombobulated the team is. Is there anything here to like on Detroit before we finish it off with one more game?
Yeah, I mean, depending on Galladay's status, you could see Marvin Jones being a playable
big week
option.
Last week. Yeah.
I will say, from a betting perspective, the system is very bullish on Green Bay at -8, which is where I think I got the line. I don't recall where it is right now, but sees Green Bay as more like 11-point favorites here. So, so a nice opportunity to hammer the favorite, which is not often where our system winds up landing. So.
Oh, yeah, I didn't really see this one. I didn't bet this one for some reason.
Not yet, buddy. You still have time. Still have time.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. Yeah, that's a pretty significant difference. My eyes just kind of, you know, went cross and glossed over that one. Let's finish this thing off. New Orleans goes in and plays Philly. I'm not sure how much we're going to kind of go back over this one. We talked a lot about this game from both sides in the cash game podcast from yesterday. We talked about Taysom Hill, still very much a cash game play here, even with a low total. He's just so much a part of what they're doing on offense, on the ground especially. And the pass completion percentage has been pretty good too outside of the Denver game, which we said yesterday, I'm kind of willing to sort of write that one off. And then we talked about Michael Thomas as a cash game play because he's just getting sort of same target share that he's seen in the past, except that his price has dropped because the early season stuff was so bad. And then the other side, I threw out Jalen Hurts as like a quasi cash game play, but I'm probably going to amend that to be just like a tournament upside guy, especially if they're running like Wildcat stuff, which appear, or, you know, or not Wildcat, pass read options. That there looks like they've already signaled that they're going to start running. Anything else to see from this game? I feel like that kind of covers it from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up for me. New Orleans defense is just quite good, so I don't know why you want to be messing with this terrible Philly offense. And yeah, you touched on Hill and Thomas. I think we're all caught up, buddy.
All right, that was a long one. There's a lot of games on this main slate as I was scrolling through.
Football.
I was like, whoa, we're still going. We're still going here. All right. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is a site, DFSR.com for short. Go to DFSR.com/deals to get yourself started in our projection system. It's an optimal lineup for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's going to include NFL, but also NBA, all under one subscription package. And NBA, fewer than 2 weeks from returning. So you're not going to get a better deal than that in the industry. We don't section it off by provider or site or who wrote the article or whatever. If we have it up there, it's yours under DFSR.com/deals. Buddy, enjoy week 14 in the NFL.
Let's get it.